Stay tuned. It's time for the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, everyone. Beautiful day here in Santa Cruz. Clear blue skies, semi-warm weather, like in the mid-50s. Mrs. Future at the controls as usual.
Yes, and here it is, the beginning of December, the last month of the crazy COVID year, and it's like summertime here in Santa Cruz.
Well, not quite, but in that direction.
All right, maybe autumn, early autumn, but it's so comfy out there. You don't even need a sweater. Yeah. It's so nice.
And our science correspondent in San Francisco, Bobby, how's the weather over there?
These are some beautiful days. I mean, just crystal clear. I can see the Farallon Islands, which are like 22 miles away.
Yeah.
Usually there's fog or something over the water. It's amazing. It's a little cool, but you know, it's like
invigorating.
A great autumn day. Hmm. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay.
And
well,
the skies are blue and there's no wind and just gorgeous.
Yeah. Can't hardly wait to get out for that sunset tonight, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, the sunsets have been amazing. Yeah, that's true.
One of our favorite things to do. Certainly, I post a lot of stuff that I think is important sometimes on Facebook, like our show. But you know what gets more hits than anything? Are my sun shop pictures.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, I like them.
Yeah, it's funny, but like sun shots are like the most important thing that I could post, at least in terms of if I wanted to go by content based on popularity, at least for me. It's pretty funny. Okay, so we got quite an interesting slate today and a new mystery, which I look forward to running by you, Bobby, as well. First of all, there's some sad news about this morning, the Arecibo Observatory destroyed completely. Now, apparently the floating platform collapsed early this morning, which destroyed the 1,000-foot dish below it. And that structure below, we had talked about it last week, had already been damaged from two of the cables supporting the dish that had snapped into two separate incidences.
Right.
Well, this was a third incident in which there was a whole large floating platform right above the center of the dish full of electronics and equipment that just gave way and crashed into the dish below it. Very sad. Very sad story.
Yeah.
It's an end of an era.
Yeah.
You know, for that radio telescopes, it was a great dish. Its time is gone. Now, did you know that the first exoplanet was discovered by that dish?
No,
the very first one.
Yeah, first exoplanet back in 1992.
Amazing.
And it discovered the first repeating FRB.
Oh, the WOW signal?
Oh, no, that's another. That's another story this week.
Okay.
And also, it discovered that Mercury takes 59 days to rotate. Not 88 like we thought before.
Wow.
And the Arecibo dish also discovered the first ever binary pulsar, which was indirect evidence of gravity waves. So those are some of its epic discoveries for us.
Wow. Historic claims to fame. Mm. Never to see the light of day again.
Yeah. Oh, we have a caller already?
We do.
Oh, my goodness.
We've got Ted and Salinas, who has been on since the very beginning of the show. Hey, Ted and Salinas, welcome to the
Dr. Future
Show.
Are you calling us, Ted?
Right. Hey, you know, time's precious. You guys aren't on too often, you know, once a week. So, you know, I'm working, so I want to squeeze a call in there once in a while, too, because I really like your show. I listen to it a lot. Hey, you know, what I got to say is, COVID to me seems like the perfect antidote to cure the opium crisis. The opium crisis created so much havoc on so many more people and hurt so many more people and cost big pharma tons of money. So now they're going to come up with a vaccine, and when everybody's got to take one and two doses of this stuff, it's going to cure that little binary problem they had there with the opium getting sued to death. And also, this is the perfect answer for people to pay McDonald's employees $15 an hour, because they're making the fast food people rich, filthy rich. Fast food has came up so much during this epidemic, it's believable. So now when everything's set in place and the dust is settled, it'll be no problem. They won't have a gripe about paying McDonald's worth of $15 because they're going to have the money and the masks are going to be dropped once the antidote comes out, and then they'll clear up all the money bills for opium.
It's all connected.
I'm glad you have such an optimistic view of the future here.
That's your, well, you know, sadly, it sounds like you're taking it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is interesting how, you know, there's more money being made by McDonald's and these guys. But where are they going to put it is another question. Knowing those guys, they might not put it into $15 an hour workers. They might put it into robot burger flippers.
Like to test the robots. You guys started off talking about the telescope and stuff. Yeah, the skies lately, even with the full moon, I looked out this morning, really sparkling, really clear skies. They just have tried to scare people in every aspect of life. And it seems like they always come up with an adjective or an adverb before the word. You just need to give me the noun. I don't need to have it with the way they try to make everything dramatic by adding words to the, but really just the basic. You know, I'm tired of the word unacceptable. To me, that's the word that's unacceptable. I hear it all the time. And to me, it's like, no, you have to deal with it. It's not about that. That word doesn't live in my vocabulary, you know. You have to get around it, whether it's good or bad, whether it's evil or not. You got to deal with it. Anytime you have a political person who talks with his hands, he's lying. They're lying to us. It's just so blatant now that every time I see that, I flip the channel to the oldies music.
Appreciate your input on this. There's a lot of, I see a lot of beefs, and talk radio is good for beefs, but we try to look at solutions as much as possible here.
Hey, thanks, Bingo. Ted.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate your call.
Good summary of the issues.
Yeah.
Catch you later.
Okay,
bye-bye. Okay, welcome back to the show. Just one more comment from the last rant that we got. I do think that there's definitely a bunch of crazy issues to deal with, not the least of which is the virus, the elections, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all important topics. But I think that these things make changes in ways that we didn't anticipate. It's like how it was an epidemic that created the first phone network in Massachusetts, where we had real phone numbers for everyone. This one, everyone's being forced online. I think the voting situation is probably the same. I think we'll probably move towards an online voting system. It'll probably be blockchain-based. You'll be able to do it from your phone. You'll have a personal AI to help you make decisions on these things, and it will be normal very fast. But we're at the very beginnings of that kind of thinking. We're still dealing with, of all things, paper mail-in ballots. How 19th century can you get? And yet, it seems to be essential to do one step back to do two steps forward. So that's my comment on that.
Yep, keeping up. And
yeah, it seems like a mistake. It seems stupid, but it has a hidden lining to it. And it's forcing us to change and hopefully in directions that make more sense and work better for all of us.
Ever the optimist, are you?
Yeah. Well, not ever, but, you know, for sure in this case.
Something I have learned from you a lot over the years is the idea of trusting the perfection. It doesn't mean that you can't question it. It just means that hindsight is 2020, right?
Yeah.
We got to where we are. Let's make the best of it.
Given the circumstances, this is what happened. It's what's real. And let's take it and use it to our advantage.
Yes. Certainly can't erase the past. No. You can
move
forward.
Mope about it.
Right.
You know, we can complain about it. But the complaints are useful for change.
Yes.
And that's their higher value, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, learn and grow, I say. Learn and grow.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the Arecibo Observatory, sadly, is gone. And I just want to put a dot on that. Very sad story. And move on to what's new in the space world. The Chinese Chang'e 5. Chang'e 5 successfully landed on the moon today.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's collecting samples. And with the space probe's sender on top, the lander's going to start digging up rocks.
That's what those little robots do, huh? And this is a little bit historic because it's one of the fully automatic space missions that's bringing us back samples, like the Bennu, right? We haven't had a lot of those.
Well, this is the third probe from China that successfully made a soft landing on the moon. And they actually sent back some footage, which we have a link to on our links page, drfutureshow.com/links. Mm-hmm. And over the next couple of days, they'll be collecting about 2 kilograms of lunar samples. Now, they're apparently going to go down like 2 meters. That's like 6 foot.
Right. They're going to create a historical tube.
2 meters distance. So they're going to do a safe distance down, socially safe distance down into the moon. And 6 feet. Now, that's a long way to dig for a robot.
Yes. Well, unless you're a drill, right?
But my understanding is that they're landing on a part of the moon that has a different geology than what of our Apollo astronauts had collected. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be a much younger part of the moon.
Oh, really? Yeah. I noticed that they think that this cylinder of sediment that they're going to collect is going to give them a historical record that goes back a billion years.
It'll be a piece of the lunar history that we don't have much information on yet. So hopefully they'll share it with us.
Yeah, we'll just turn it over to Google Translate, right?
And so they're planning to send it back later this month. They're going to land in the desert, and not by the obelisk in Utah, which is now gone, but in North China's Inner Mongolia is where it's going to land. And once it's completed, it'll be part of the world's first unmanned sample return mission from the moon in 40 years. We have not gotten samples for 40 years. And they'll be the third country in the world to bring back lunar samples. Us and the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union had brought back a little bit of moon samples in the 70s, believe it or not. They had a robotic ship that could do it back then. Yeah, pretty interesting. So keep an eye on those guys. I want to see how they dig that 2 meter deep hole.
Is it kind of like a core sample like they do for the ice?
That's how they describe it.
Yeah, like a drill that just goes down.
Yeah, like a drill. Yeah. And then you could do a timeline and figure out how old things are as you go deeper.
Yeah, that seemed to be the intention.
Kind of like we go look at ice samples here on this planet, the Antarctic and Arctic oceans. It can reveal a lot about the geology. Even more importantly for us is the weather changes that have gone on. On the planet over thousands, in this case, millions of years.
The vertical timeline. You go down to go back, you go up to go future.
Yeah.
And they're bringing back, what was it, 5 kilos?
I think they said two.
Two. Oh, 2 kilos. Right. 2 kilos. I was thinking, okay, that's 5 pounds. 5 pounds.
There you go. You're just translating.
I know. You got to be careful about this, you know.
Which unit?
Centimeters.
Right.
Inches. God, how many cultures have to learn both? Us and, I don't know, England. So that's interesting. Keep an eye open on the China's Chang'e. We were looking up the pronunciation of that. It's Chang apostrophe E. Now, from what we found is that Chang is supposed to be pronounced like change, but with an H, Chang. And the E is like in her, but without the R. So that's Chang, something like that. It sounds like a grunt, and I don't think we use grunts as much in English as part of the language. But we know how to do them because it goes back to a basic language we all know and love from a million years ago, the grunt language. Okay. Now, you have been hearing about that mysterious silver monolith in the Utah desert, how it appeared.
Yeah, the one you talked about last week that mysteriously appeared in Utah, and it was discovered by folks who were tracking the migration patterns of some wild goats or something, right?
That's right.
And they found the alien artifact, a little silver monolith.
Well, this has become quite a cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. People from all over the country have been driving out there to take a look at it.
Oh,
and it's like a 40-minute hike from the closest road. So, they found it. They weren't going to give away its GPS units, but people figured it out anyway. Mm-hmm. And then a couple days ago, it disappeared. Just a couple pieces of metal left over.
No.
Yeah.
As mysteriously as it arrived, it's gone?
It is. Several people have been trying to track what happened to it. Somebody saw a truck drive away from the area, so they don't think it was beamed up or anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was probably a
didn't
terrestrial.
Didn't dissolve into energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Greg, it's a sacrificial anode. Oh, yeah? What's the cathode? If it was an anode, where's the cathode?
I have one of those in my hot water heater.
Sacrificial anode?
It's called a sacrificial rod, yeah.
Really? What, does it slowly degrade over time?
It's made of magnesium. Yeah. Magnesium. Sometimes it's made of aluminum, but it's so that the acids in the water, the city water, would eat at this sacrificial rod as opposed to eating the lining of the hot water heater.
Oh, it's like a distraction or a way for...
It needs something to eat on. Yeah, instead of eating your pipes or eating or causing your hot water heater to fail early.
Well, that's pretty clever.
So that's what these anodes are. Or you can actually put it as a rod, as a grounding rod. That's another way to do it.
Yeah, in this case, if it's aluminum, what is it grounding?
No, what it does, it takes electrical energy and it diverts it from pipes in the water. Let's say you had a copper pipe in the water. You need to put one of these anodes next to it so that the electrical energy doesn't go through the copper pipe and to the ground. It actually goes through this other rod and then eats up the other rod instead.
And so what's the name of your gadget again?
A sacrificial anode.
Sacrificial anode for?
Yeah, hot water heaters.
For a hot water heater. Okay.
Yeah, they're usually made of either aluminum or magnesium.
Right, right. And there was one in the desert was stainless steel, which is a whole different deal. Well, I guess it's probably not a part of an alien hot water heater, but it did disappear.
Little do we know.
Little did we know.
We can't find out now.
I did see some interesting videos. I saw some kids tapping on it. They put them up on Instagram, and it looks like it had rivets in it, so it was definitely human. And whoever took it away left a couple pieces. Like, they left this little triangle top on the ground. And we had another crew holding it up.
Right. There was a funny little tweet of the ground crew that went there hoping to revisit it for the second time. And when they arrived, instead of finding the full monolith, they just found a lousy triangular footprint.
Which is better than nothing. I mean, you got to admit, to find something there after a huge hike and driving across country to get there, it's better than nothing.
Somebody was in a hurry.
Yeah, the mystery continues, and this either shows that it's a mystery or our species is very bored. But another mysterious monolith suddenly appeared in Romania, of all places.
Mm.
Similar design, 10 to 12 feet tall, looks like stainless steel.
Ah, so we know who stole it from Utah.
Yeah, and beamed it over to Romania.
Yeah.
It's near the Romanian city of Piatra Neamț. Neamt.
Huh. I wonder if those aliens have to quarantine.
I doubt it.
If you go steal a monolith from Utah, do you have to isolate for a few days once you get it over to Romania?
I suppose it depends on whether or not it was infected.
Or whether it's even the same one.
Or whether...
Maybe it's a knockoff.
But, you know, in the original monolith in 2001 A Space Odyssey, it did infect, but not as a disease. It infected the minds of the apes. Right, so the apes were...
Permanently altered.
Yeah.
More intelligent.
Theoretically.
Well, you could say that. More violent.
Well, you say more intelligent, but they picked up bones and started killing each other. I don't know if that's more intelligent.
Yeah, before then they used to just like snarl at each other.
Yeah.
They got serious after the monolith.
Yeah, that's where they figured out how to use tools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or figure out how to use opposable thumbs.
Yeah.
Tools being one bonus of having an opposable thumb.
Guess what?
What's
this
that?
Day is flying
by.
Oh,
man. Yeah, we have a special guest on in half an hour, so share that with you then. Meanwhile, we've got more fun. And another mystery involving COVID I want to discuss just came out this morning. We'll see you in a minute. Hey, welcome back to the show. Okay, this story is very interesting. While I was researching the Chinese landing on the moon story, I was looking at a Chinese newspaper called CGTN. And in that, you know, sometimes when I go to new sources of information, I'll look at to see what other stories they have that are going on in that particular paper. Like one of the ones in China is like the China Daily News, and you can see what's going on in that part of the world. Well, in this case, when I went to the homepage, and they had a story called CDC study shows COVID-19 infected people in the U.S. in mid-December 2019. I said, oh, that's an interesting, because our evidence here, or at least what we've been told, was that January 19th was when it hit America. But when I looked at this Chinese story, they actually cited a CDC study, a new study that came out from the CDC. It was a study published in the Journal of Clinical of Infectious Diseases on Monday, where CDC researchers had tested the blood samples of 7,389 routine blood donations collected by the Red Cross from December 13th to January 17th last 2019 and this year, for antibodies specifically to novel coronavirus, which since then has become known as SARS-CoV-2. So the antibodies are suggesting that somebody had it and they fought it off, okay? So that there was presence suggesting an exposure to the virus. Well, all those tests of 7,300, they found 106 people with antibodies of the 7,389 blood donors. And this suggests that the infection happened possibly as early as December 2019, and that they were from 9 states across the U.S., 39 samples from California, Oregon, Washington State. Those were collected between December 13th and the 16th, and 67 samples from Massachusetts, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Connecticut. Oh, yes, and Rhode Island, collected between December 30th and January 17th. And those indicated that the infections were all already happening and isolated by early this year. So what does this tell you?
Okay, let me decode what I think you said.
Okay.
You said that the CDC did an analysis of blood samples from donated blood.
Right.
And they looked at blood samples at the Red Cross for the period of 6 months before.
Well, no, it's December 13th. 2019 to January 17th.
Oh, so just in that period, December 13th to January.
Right.
And so during that time, which is before the January 19th, where we officially count the U.S.
Right. Especially
first case.
December 13th through 16th, where there were 39 samples from California, Oregon, and Washington states.
Mm-hmm. And what they found appears to be the evidence of the antibodies that are caused by the corona COVID-19 virus.
Right, right, exactly.
And yet, it doesn't say COVID-19. It says the
SARS-CoV-2.
SARS-CoV-2 is the more general
antibodies
classification.
SARS-CoV-2 antibodies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, we're not expert enough, but that makes me wonder if the test was accurate enough to isolate the COVID-19.
Well, they go into detail at what the tests were, and it sounds like they're pretty well-known antibody tests if you go to the CDC website.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on this, Bobby?
I had heard of this, too, that they were looking for patient zero, right?
Mm.
And they all thought it all started out of
Wuhan.
Wuhan, but then I heard one story that they found one in the United States, and here you're describing this story.
Yes.
More in depth. Mm-hmm. And so this is very interesting.
Yes, isn't it?
Now, it sounds like these are just blood samples that they could pick
right.
and find out when these were done. And then in retrospect, they can go back and look for the antibody.
Yes, that's like what they did. Yeah. Remember there's a water sample from Portugal from 2019 where they found evidence of the virus then too.
Mm-hmm.
And water samples from earlier in 2019. I think it was March.
Yeah. From
in Spain, actually. From Spain sewage water.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, another mystery to explore. Now, what could this mean? Could this mean that it started here and then there was a cover-up, and we sent it to China to make it look come from there. Maybe it was some kind of military warfare thing. Who knows? But the possibilities are all open right now as to why it would be here.
All right. Earlier. So you're definitely putting
I don't, I'm just thinking. Just looking at the evidence.
A little accent mark to the mystery.
Yes. Anyway, we'll continue to investigate.
Yeah, I'll do some research on this.
Check our links page. Also goes to the CDC article originally, too, and you can tell you exactly what kind of antibody test they were using.
Yeah, see if the antibody is specific to COVID-19 or if it's just any coronavirus.
Or why are they calling it SARS-CoV-2 so early?
Meanwhile, hello, Charles from Watsonville.
Hey, Charles.
Hello there, Doc. I got a couple of quickies for you.
Yeah.
First of all, when you the Chinese expedition to pick up moon rocks,
yes,
it didn't tell me they were going to dig down 6 feet. Now, my question is, have they cleared this to make sure they aren't going to be hitting gas mains and electrical conduits?
Well, who would they check with?
E&E.
I think at this point, they just cross their fingers and hope for the best.
Lunar gas and electric.
Lunar gas and electric. Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Charles.
Yep. That's funny.
Of the monolith, the fugitive from that awful movie, you had the story that it had disappeared from Utah, but Rosemary, this morning on her program, it has reappeared in Romania.
Yeah, we just mentioned that just before the break. But yes, isn't that interesting? Now, what do you think about that?
I don't know what to think. It would be nice if instead of that insipid ending, they could come up with something better. First of all, the light show that wasn't nearly as good as Fantasia, and then the room with the baby in it. Give me a...
I remember as a teenager scratching my head over that one.
They did a field trip of some of the kids in the top scholastic. Anyway, a couple of busloads of us, they took us to Monterey to a theater, and we saw 2001.
Yeah.
And, I really enjoyed the part where the computer started singing Daisy Bell.
That was pretty epic, yeah.
I mean, that was a moment, you know. You had this nifty story going and everything, and then your rear end's starting to get sore because the movie's too long, but... Then at the end, it just completely dissolves into a puddle of absolutely nothing intelligible, and I felt like I'd been robbed. No. I would have rather watched an average Wheeler Woolsey movie.
it was like it was written by somebody else. That last part of the movie, it's like another.
Really?
Seemed like it would what did didn't
was
it?
Was there R.C. Clarke who did the?
He did, but I don't know if he was the guy that would have the psychedelic light trip as part of his understanding of reality, you know?
Well, the original book by Arthur C. Clarke, they were supposed to go to Saturn and actually go and land on Saturn.
Not Jupiter?
Yes, if you look at the original book, yeah.
Are you talking about landing on the actual planet or on one of the moons?
One of the moons of Saturn, that's correct, yeah.
I was going to say, it'd have to be because you can't land on Jupiter or Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the psychedelics show looked like it was going through the atmosphere there.
Yeah, you think that would be a Jupiterian atmospheric experience?
Yeah,
but then what do you find? A living room with a kid in it.
Yeah, it means you died or something along those lines.
It was a time travel.
That's right. That's right. It was interpreted as a time travel, but then he was very comfortable. It looked like he had been there for a long time, and he got to see himself.
I mean, it was interpreted as a cop out, and they couldn't figure out an ending for the movie. But then again, I'm hard headed. I just want to raise those 2 points with you. And since you've already got the news about the Romanian thing, I guess the next thing we ought to do is all book passage on the Coronia or something.
Well, they're hoping. I think that there's some. Thought that the Romanians put it up for just that purpose, for attracting tourists.
Might work.
But
works.
I'm curious, how did they get it there so fast? I mean, poof, it's gone one day and poof, it arrives the next day. I mean, that's not FedEx.
Have you ever heard Beam Me Up, Scotty?
That's what I think.
And Mr. Scott probably took care of that.
Yeah, he moved it around. And if he's smart, once you have the replication formula for transmitting molecules, you should be able to replicate it. So you could beam it down in several locations.
But just make sure you don't get a fly in there.
That could really mess it up.
Price.
Thanks, you know,
Charles.
Good old Jeff Goldblum.
You saw the remake, huh?
I did. And it was kind of funny because I actually, one of the few Hollywood celebs I ever met, one was Jeff Goldblum. And really? I saw him. Yeah, he was working on a film called Hideaway, which was being done by a Santa Cruz filmmaker, Brett Leonard, who's now down in Hollywood. And it was up in BC. We got to see him with Christine Lottie in that.
So did you actually have a chance to say hello and exchange greetings?
Oh, I did. I hung out with him for a while. You know, we talked, and he was very interested in amateur filmmaking at the time because, you know, we're having a digital revolution in the technology, and I was on top of that, and he was very fascinated and stayed in touch for years.
There's a great story to tell. Well, yeah. I'll ring off, get back to your program.
Yeah.
But thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks, Charles. Great.
Yeah, it is fascinating, the whole thing about the 2001 reoccurring with this
monolith.
Yeah, they call it, it was more square in the movie. This was more triangular from what I could see. There's like three sides to it. Pretty interesting. Okay, we'll be right back after the break. You're talking to myself, Mrs. Future, and Bobby Wilder in San Francisco.
And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He told me.
Okay. Since we've been dealing with potential contact from the mysterious others, whether it be extra or intra-terrestrials, there was a very interesting story about an update on the famous WOW signal. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the...
That was in the movie Contact.
Really. Yeah, right. It actually happened in the 70s. I guess Contact put it out there in the 90s when that film came out. But it was SETI's most famous signal ever seen at that time. The Big Ear radio telescope in Delaware, Ohio, which was disassembled back in 98, had been in operation for over 30 years. And it wasn't never the biggest radio telescope, or even the more sensitive, but it made this famous observation back on August 15th, 1977, where it found a strong intermittent signal that lasted for 72 seconds that stood out from the background noise like a searchlight.
Signs of intelligent life, perhaps?
Well, the team was very curious about that. They quickly ruled out terrestrial origin, like broadcast from a satellite or anything along those lines. But it was so powerful that Jerry Amon, the astronomer who analyzed the data, printed out WOW on the computer printout.
The name of the signal.
The WOW signal, right. Which it became later on. It was highly suggestive of some kind of extraterrestrial intelligent origin, but little more could be said about it because it never repeated, right? It was just a one-time 72-second signal. Mm. Well, they checked the star catalogs at the time, and they were looking for, well, if it's going to be intelligence that talks to us, maybe they have a sun that's kind of like us. So we're looking for sun-like stars in the area of the universe where this signal came from. But they found none back then. So up until recently, the WOW signal remained unexplained and unrepeated. Well, this week, a probable source has surfaced.
Yeah. Just this week, huh?
Just this week, yeah. The finding is a result of some very clever sleuthing by an amateur astronomer and the use of this new fabulous 3D map of the galaxy.
Ooh, that sounds like something fun to explore.
Didn't exist back then. A little background on this. Back in 2013, the European Space Agency launched the Gaia Space Observatory, and its purpose was to map the night sky, but in 3D. It determines the position, the distance, the motion of stars with unprecedented accuracy, and a lot. They've been mapping, so far, 1.3 billion stars.
Wow.
1.3 billion. It allows our astronomers to have this most detailed 3D star map of our galaxy, you know, where they're rotating and moving, and you can zoom in on them and look at different star systems and how they're behaving, and it's unbelievable. It significantly improved our understanding of the galaxy and all our stars in it, and it gave an astronomer named Alberto Caballero an idea that this Gaia database was now significantly more detailed than the star catalog that John Krauss had studied back in the 70s. So he thought, well, maybe we should use this new 3D star catalog and look again at the origin of the WOW signal.
Oh, very interesting. So we're going to find out what else is in that section of the sky now that we don't have just a flat drawing of it. We have a 3D drawing of it.
Exactly, exactly. So Caballero repeated the search. He looked for sun-like stars among the thousands that had been identified by the Gaia database in that region. By sun-like, he means like stars that have the same temperature, the radius, the luminosity as ours. And interestingly enough, his search turned out just one solar system.
Oh, there's only one that fits
only
the bill.
Only one potential sun-like star in the WOW signal region. Yeah, it's got a great name. It's 2 mass, 1928, 1882, 2640, 123.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a real keeper as far as the names go.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, just memorize that.
Easy number to remember.
Yeah. I'm going to call it 2 mass.
2 mass 19, because we're all used to saying 19 these days.
That's a little more like a rapper name. 2 mass
19. In the constellation Sagittarius, it's about 1,800 light years from us. It appears to be an identical twin to our sun, same temperature, radius, and luminosity. But it doesn't necessarily mean that 2 mass 1928, 1882, 2640, 123 might have the same source as the original. But it's in the right area. There are other stars in the region that are still too dim for us to fully see properly, even with our improved database.
So we think maybe because the star is the same, maybe there's a planetary civilization that's also similar to ours.
That's the thought, that's
able to send out one radio signal every few hundred billion years.
Yeah, it's a mirror universe, so we should look for something that's kind of like us. And at least for starters, until we know there's something that's not like us that we could identify. But we're kind of limited by what we know,
Well, it's a very interesting coincidence that it happened during that 30-year window when CSETI was operating. Or not CSETI, just SETI.
Yeah, we have a tantalizing clue. But now we have 2 mass 19 to look at, right? Mm. The 2 mass is the best choice. They actually have found about 66 star systems in that area that are potential candidates. Not as strong as evidence as 2 mass. So I thought that was interesting. It's our best bet and a good candidate for future study. I think the next step would be for us to look at that star system for exoplanets.
Okay.
All right, and astronomers could be prioritizing that study of that part of the sky for exoplanets. In the meantime, they have to come up with a better name, don't you think?
We can call it the WOW Galaxy. How's that? The WOW Signal.
No, the WOW Star.
The WOW Star. Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
WOW Star Mass 2. 2 mass. WOW Star 2 mass. Don't leave that out.
No, I wouldn't leave that out. Okay, so let's see. There's a game changer for the Mars colony. A new technology that's come out that can extract water and fuel from salty water.
Ooh, yes. That's one of the more interesting things on today's slate, I think.
I think so. In terms of scientific engineering breakthroughs, engineers at the McKelvey School of Engineering at Washington University in St. Louis have developed a brine electrolysis system that not only works without needing purified water, but actually performs better in salty water, which is exactly what we'll find on Mars.
Right. The water we found on Mars is very salty.
Yeah. Salty water itself isn't potable, and the standard method of separating it, electrolysis, is cumbersome and expensive and makes it way too expensive, to be pragmatic. On Mars, what we found so far is that the water, if it isn't frozen, it's very salty. And so we have to find something that we can use that salt water for. So this is the technology, the Martian brine electrolyzer, radically changes the logical calculus of missions to Mars and beyond. Wherever we will find salty water, we can now make food and fuel and air for breathing. It's a very, very useful technology. And how did they do it? Well, they have a new type of custom engineered anodes and cathodes. Hey, the ruthenate pyrochlore anode and a platinum on carbon cathode. And that seems to work really well, especially in a simulated Martian atmosphere of minus 33 degrees Fahrenheit. It works well in cold temperatures. It produces both oxygen and hydrogen.
Okay, so we're going to have to do salty hot tubs on Mars, huh?
Well, no, with this technology, you'd be able to have clean water if you wanted.
Right, but basically we start with the salty hot tub, which then we use our electrolyzer, we use our brine electrolyzer to extract the hydrogen to warm it up and to create the air that we can breathe while we're enjoying the hot water on Mars.
You are Miss Funmeister tonight. That sounds
just
good.
Just saying.
But
I mean,
I don't know.
We,
the minus 36.
We don't want to have to freeze while we're there.
You know, the minus 33 degrees, you know, we need to deal with that for hot water, for hot tubs.
Yeah.
Know? And
big time.
Yeah. A slush. It's slushy salt water.
Mm.
If we can figure that out. Apparently, magnesium salt prevents the water from freezing and lowers the electrical resistance. And that's a key, is you need magnesium perchloride. You know, and they think there's a lot of that on Mars as well. So we'll see how it goes.
Anyway,
I thought that was an interesting breakthrough.
New kind of electrolyzer. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
You got 1 minute. Mrs. Future had a favorite story. You can check on our links page about how it explains orbits. You can't do it in a minute. I know. Maybe we'll do it after our guest.
Yeah.
But it's hard to get into space, but great once you're there. It's all about orbits.
Yes. What I really liked about this story, it's kind of a, for people who are interested in studying how space works, it tells you some fascinating insights about how the further up you go, the faster you have to go in space. And it gives you some interesting thought experiments, but it's way too late to try and express.
That's true. Yeah, you can actually do thought experiments and understand how gravity and orbiting works. It's a fascinating article.
Yeah,
and, gives
it's a fun read.
Newton's thought experiments.
So check it out on drfutureshow.com on the links page. And we'll be back after traffic, news, and weather here on the Dr. Future Show on KSEO Santa Cruz.
We'll see you in a minute.